Joining me now are the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors. They're located in Brooklyn, New York, and they've been regulars on the show. Well, Al, I've been here 25 years. We just celebrated my 25th anniversary. You were here before I got here.
Yes, with Marty Wayne. It was
the first host.
Yes, and he was when he first got on the show, he says, a home repair person trying to show people how to fix things on radio? How do you do that? But he tried me out one day. And then he says, I want you back. And that was the beginning.
And I inherited you.
Yes. It was in his will.
And then I inherited Lawrence.
Actually, I like to think of mine as more of an adoption, but that's okay.
Anybody else?
No, I got people in the wings.
Yeah, we have somebody outside, right?
Yeah, we got people in the wings.
And when you come here, we take listener calls at 212-433-9692. Calls are already coming in. We also field questions from on our show page at WNYC.org. People write in their comments. We have a quiz, which is a regular part of this. And generally, we talk about what people should know at any given time of the year. Right now, we are going through a weird time of the year because we went from severe cold and snow just a couple of weeks back to 60 degrees today.
We're neither here nor there. We're in between.
But one of the things I've been seeing because of this change of weather and also the amount of ice and snow that's come off people's roofs is people with homes and with flat roofs who have flat roofs on your co-op or condo. You got to clean the roof drains. You got to clean the gutters and leaders now because they're backing up because we're probably going to be getting quite a bit of rain comes April, and those things are going to block up, and you're going to get leakage inside the house. And I'm seeing gutters and leaders that are just completely filled with leaves and gook.
The snow melts and it brings those leaves with it.
Right down the hill.
Well, actually, some of the leaves are there from last autumn.
Right.
And now they're solidified.
Mud. It turns into mud.
Yeah, that good stuff. That's good mulch.
Yeah, it is good mulch. It's good. If you could scoop it out of there and put it right in your garden, it'd be great.
Or flower pots or something like that. That's really good stuff.
But we know how many gardens people in Manhattan have, but it works great.
They have roof gardens, I think.
I have a garden.
You have a garden?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. What are you going to do with your garden? You going to make a victory garden?
I have, yeah.
We won?
We won.
I grow vegetables and flowers.
What did we win when we won?
I take all of the stuff, the coffee grinds and all of the stuff they cut away from vegetables and stuff, and I've made a serious compost.
That's exactly what I do in my garden.
You can do it in the city.
You know what's really good that I found out? I found out that if you don't have too much but you want to make it easy and it'll mulch very quickly, is if you have a blender and you blend it with water and everything else, and it makes it into like a liquid form, and then put that around the plants. That's great because it starts to ferment almost immediately.
I've just been letting it sit there. Those orange peels and eggshells, they take a while to decompose.
Yeah, that takes a millennium to mulch.
But the other thing that I've been seeing lately, I've been doing quite a number of brand new co-ops and condos, and I've been a little sensitive of looking at the toilet bowls in the bathrooms. There are codes that dictate what the distance must be from toilet to wall, toilet to wall. Yeah, there is actually a code on that, and it's in the new building code. It's part of the state code since 2002.
But why would it matter whether the toilet was right up against the wall or up against the bathtub?
For a couple of reasons. One, think about the way one sits on a toilet. You don't sit there with your knees together like you're going down a slalom. You sit there, relax. Also, if you happen to be a particularly wide person, you're going to hit the wall. Okay, so there's that issue. Also, so the toilet actually is supposed to have 15 inches from the center line of the toilet to any obstruction, be that a wall.
That's the minimum.
That's minimum. And also 21 inches in front of the toilet. And also there's a code that says it has to be at least 6 feet above the toilet.
And you're not seeing that when you do your
inspections? No, I'm not. They're not centering it. They're putting it closer to one. I had one client who actually got a concession from the builder to take some money off because to move it would have been thousands and thousands of dollars. And so I told my client, well, it's going to cost you $2,000-$3,000 to move because you got to break up the floor. You got to put an offset connection on it and put
a new lead bend.
Well, an offset bend.
Yeah.
an offset connection to put it together and then put the floor back and then put the toilet back. And that's going to quite – so people should look for this part when they're buying. They should look at the clearances, especially around the toilet. And I find that – but when you're buying an old building, it doesn't really apply because it was built under a code that doesn't really apply.
Yeah, but most of us are not really very familiar with the code, with building code. So what do we do?
Before you buy an apartment or a house, you really should have some home inspector. Not necessarily us, but there are plenty of people from the American Society. American Society of Home Inspectors.
Whoa, whose friend are you?
Yeah.
Well, do you know us?
I'm a friend in the business.
I always felt uncomfortable about promoting ourselves. It really.
Good, because I don't use us.
That's a father and son kind of condition. But anyway, there's also we have to give them the word.
Let's give the word and then give out the phone number and then start taking calls, okay?
This is really a good one. I give it to you.
Okay, can I read it?
Yes.
This is month's word game. The last one was so tough it took 3 shows.
Well, and we made a rule. All the words must be English words now.
Yes. Okay, the question here is, what is the name given to the part of some electric motors that have a ribbon of metal contact points that act as switches that reverse the magnetic polarity, which in turn makes the motor spin when electrified? And this is a word that sounds like a lot of other words.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's all the only hint I'm giving.
Yes.
So you probably have seen something that looks like this, even though you didn't know what the heck it was.
That's true.
Okay. Yes. So we invite your calls at 212-433-9692 if you have a question, a home repair question, or if you think you know the answer to this. And you're listening to Leonard Lopecha on WNYC, 93.9 AM 820 WNYC. My guests are the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. Should we start taking some calls?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Okay, let's go right to the first caller, Robert from Marine Park, Brooklyn. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
What's up? Hello, Alan, Larry.
Hi, what's up?
Yeah, go forth and fix. Okay.
we really try. We really try.
I have a one-family house, flat roof, attached on both sides, and I put in a rubberized roof 3 or 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's been great. You know, sometimes on the sides, I always do a little patch up myself, fill in my sides. It always opens up. Okay, here's the only problem. Ever since me and my father owned the house, the flat part of the roof from the back of the house, mm-hmm. there's always like a little dip in the roof and with the same spot all the time.
Hold on. The dip is in the back of the house?
No, like on the roof.
Yeah, but what part of the roof? In the middle, in the side, toward the front?
Going toward the back, like 3 feet from the edge of the back.
Right, and you get a pond over there,
yeah.
Right?
Now, the ceiling is always a little bit damp underneath. How can I get rid of that little pond?
Well, first of all, I want to just say that the reason it's happening in that portion of the building is because in that section of the building, usually there's one big open room back there on the second floor, correct?
Well, yeah, it's a regular bedroom.
Yeah, I'm saying, it's like in the center of the building, there's a hallway that goes right down the building that separates the hallway from the rooms. So in the front, you don't have that support in the middle.
Yeah, right.
And that's why it sags a little bit.
Yeah. That could be one of the reasons, but you have to also understand that if this is a row house, it's probably a cock loft over there. And probably at that area for a long time, because it's probably an older building, mm-hmm. it could have rotted away from previous owners who didn't take care of the gutters mm-hmm. and leaders at the rear of the house. So it's very soft in there. If one would open it up and find out that it's deteriorated, you may have to put new roofing boards there. However,
or actually new framing also.
Or framing. But how sometimes what a roofer can do is he can fill it in with layers of roofing material and flatten it out so that there is no ponding at that location.
It's not a big puddle, but can I do it myself? Get a little roofing material and with cement.
Well, that's what I was.
You should do it with layers.
Can I say?
No.
Okay,
but
fine.
You can go ahead.
What you could do is just build it up a little bit with layers of the same material. I think what you're calling a rubber roof is probably a modified bituminous or modified bitumen roof, which was either torch laid, correct? Hello?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was torch laid, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you can get more of that material. Unfortunately, I wouldn't want you to use torches because they outlawed in New York City the use of torch laid material on wood frame buildings.
The same time that they made sure that your toilet was at least 15 inches away from the wall.
Yes, because they got tired of the buildings burning down. Anyway, but you can build it up with more material, and that's what we recommend you do right now.
Yeah, and we thank you so much for calling us.
Well, you know, in talking about roofs, I get a newsletter every so often from the U.S. Energy Office. And they came up with something really interesting, a new type of device of roofing shingles. And the roofing shingles are actually produce electricity.
They're solar-voltaic shingles.
Yeah, made of roofing material that can be put in by a roofer and then finally connected to the grid by an electrician. And this is something like the roof not only protects from the elements, but it also produces electricity and washes your clothes and everything else. So you really, it could actually pay back in the long run the cost of the roof. Mm-hmm. And this is a really innovative new device.
Solar energy from your roof.
Yeah, right. Solar energy from your roof.
And you become an energy producer.
Well, in the book I wrote a number of years ago, the Energy Guide, which I give away, by the way, whoever anybody guesses the word, it has a whole section on solar voltaics and how much energy the United States could save if every roof in the United States had solar voltaic panels. And this is a good beginning in that effort. And I commend the companies that are now developing them. One happens to be Dow Chemical, but there are other companies that are trying to develop this type of a device.
Let's go to another call. Laura from Westchester. Hi, you're on.
Hi, Laura.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about the ceiling of my little lake house up in Upper Westchester.
Yeah,
we put an addition on the very back of the house and have had some settling.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard contractors call it, and the settling looks like lots and lots of cracks in the sheetrock directly underneath the roof. So my questions are: how much settling is normal, and how could I fix the ceiling? Both cosmetically and perhaps a little bit more like mechanically without putting on a new roof.
Let me ask you one question. Is the cracks all kind of straight cracks, or are they kind of curved, or they go in different directions?
They are all perpendicular to each other, and I happen to know that the part of the roof that we had added is to code, but the part of the roof that was extant was not to code. It was built before there was a code here.
Right.
So it's like 10-inch beams instead of 12 or something. So I think there's like all sorts of stressors along all the perpendicular lines.
I think what's really happening here is, when was this addition put up, you said?
Last year.
I think what's happening here, because all the cracks are perpendicular to one another,
yeah,
what I think I'm seeing here is shrinkage and drying out of the new lumber, the old lumber that was in the building that was, quote-unquote, not built to code. And it was built to code at the time it was put in. That's also a lot of things that contractors like to say, this was not built to code. No, it's not built to today's code. But if the building was built 20, 30, 50, 100 years ago, whatever the code was then, that's the code, and it was most likely built to it then. So let's not get caught up in that.
Sure, good.
What I'm thinking is, what I would try doing, before you go spending lots of money and pulling stuff down, I would try just taping and spackling the cracks again and repainting the ceiling.
Right. Do I need to chip out any of the...
Not really. I mean, I would take off all the loose material if there's any loose edges. But no, just with a nice wide trowel, anywhere between 10 or 12-inch wide trowel, so you get a nice feather up to the spackle or the joint compound, and just redo it and then repaint it and see what happens. Because I think what's happening is that the wood... This happened in my house, too, when I put in a closet, and it was brand-new lumber. The rest of the house is from 1933, and that lumber shrunk, and then I got cracks all over the place. And then I taped the spackle, and the cracks never came back. Yeah?
Thank you so much, Laura, for calling us.
I would give that a shot. What town are you in?
She's in Westchester. Where?
What town in Westchester?
I'm in North Salem.
Okay, yeah, I know where that is. Right by Golden's Bridge there.
Yeah, all these little lake communities.
Yes,
previous
great place.
Summer houses that people live in year-round now.
I know. My sister has a place up in Carmel, which is very nice also.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a few people who've called in with what they think are the answers to the quiz.
Well, let's
you
want
to read the quiz one more time, Larry, before
sure, I'll
we
give
go?
It. What is the name given to the part of some electric motors that have a ribbon of metal contact points that act as switches that reverse the magnetic polarity, which in turn makes the motor spin when electrified?
And David, what do you think it is?
I think it's the armature.
No, the armature is the actual thing that's turning. It's not what we're looking for.
Okay. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Go now to Mario from Queens. Hi, Mario.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Mario.
What do you think?
The commutator.
Wow. Well, this one is not going to be going for a long time.
It's not going for a record on this one. So how did you know this one? So Mario, how did you know this one?
Because I do electrical work.
Unfair. Whoa. No, it's not unfair, because the last one was a French word, and it was won by a French person.
That's true,
so,
too.
I mean,
yeah, but we were desperate the last time.
Yeah, I know. I was listening to that program when you were going from week to week. It sounded like it was going to be a real humdinger.
Anyway, hold on the line, and the producer will take
it. That's also for DC Motor, by the way.
That's true. DC, but there are AC motors that use the same principle in order to get greater torque.
True.
But that's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, but it was basically for DC motors originally.
Right. Mario, hang on, and we are going to... my producer will talk to you, take your address, and what are you going to send
get
him?
Get the book called The Save Energy, Save Money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by George Merlis and
George Merlis and myself.
Yes.
And it's interesting you said that it's for torque, because this is a torque show.
This is a torque show.
And my guests are...
I was wondering how you were going to pun that, and it was really good.
Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, the gurus of how to. We'll be back with more of your calls and your comments after this. We're back with the gurus of how to, Al and Larry U. Bell. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WMYC.org. And we have two comments that deal with faucets. So I'm going to throw them both out, and maybe we can merge them. Rick in Mamaroneck says, we have a bathroom faucet, hot water, that shudders violently whenever it's turned on. What can we do? Mm-hmm. Eve on the Upper West Side says, I replaced the faucets in my bathroom sink a year ago along with some new piping in the sink. The water still tastes very metallic unless I run it at least 5 minutes. Is there any way to clean or flush out the pipes and faucets? And a third person says I have to find that one, the water comes in hot for a while on the cold faucet and then switches to cold later in the day.
Each one of those are three different problems. And let's do with the first
problem.
Go with
the shutter.
Well, I was just trying to faucet all into one.
This is a faucet thing. All right, we're going to faucet down somebody's throat. Anyway, I'm getting punned like you are. You're a contagious person.
You ever want to get to the question?
All right. Anyway, the chattering of the valve when you open it and close it is a result of a loose washer. There's a washer that squeezes against the seat that closes off the water. And if that washer is not bulging tight, it's going to chatter and have a vibration, almost like the reed of a clarinet or a bassoon.
So is this easy to fix?
It's easy if you have to take the whole valve apart, and then you got to tighten up a screw until it bulges. Or maybe the screw is broken or it's gone. That's right at the seat inside the valve.
And as far as what was the second one? Was
the water tasting metallic?
Metallic. That is something that if they use the proper kind of piping, that's going to take a little while to go away. But what I would try first, which a lot of people don't do, is if you find the water pressure is reducing in fixtures or getting worse, is you need to clean out the aerators that are on the ends of the faucets, and that's the little screen thing. So take it apart. There might be inside that material inside there. There might be some loose metal filings. There might be some what they call flux, which is used for cleaning off the copper piping before they solder it. And I would clean all those things out for now, but it may just take time for that to go away. And the last one was the cold.
Wait, no. This is Fred. Actually, Fred asked this question. Hi, Fred from Queens.
Hi, Fred.
Did I pose a question well?
Here's what happened, and I'm so nervous because it's been going on for a year and a half.
Yeah.
I live in Rochdale, Queens, so you're familiar with that.
Yeah, but
yes, I know exactly where you're at.
Okay. And On the somewhere between midnight and 5 a.m., I'll be getting hot water out of the cold side to the extent of 5 gallons, up to 5 gallons.
But I need to ask a question first. Is this in a single-family home, or is this in
Roche, it's co-op.
No, it's a co-op. It's a great big co-op.
Fine. Okay. Go.
It's a co-op. What's happening is somebody in your building has a washing machine, probably in the kitchen area or something like that, and they put in what is known as a cross connection. Now, when they shut off the valves or whatever it is, the water is still migrating from the hot water cold line into the cold water line, and that's a natural phenomenon that heat tries to dissipate itself. So what happens is all the pipes on the cold water pipe line could be filled up with hot water. So when you turn on your faucet, which you may not have a washing machine in your apartment, all of a sudden you're getting their hot water.
Supposedly it's been inspected. We are not allowed to have washing machines, and indeed we don't.
Well, somebody may have snuck it in through the front door or the back door and put in some sort of device.
Swear to me that's not, and they swear to me they've been in every apartment.
But let me ask you a question. How old is this building?
Building 63, I believe.
You know, it also could be that someone put in a pair of faucets where they're connected through some type of device that way.
Or a mixing valve.
Or something. There's somewhere in the building that the hot water and the cold water are connected directly to each other, and when you turn on the cold water, it's sucking hot water from the hot water side, and that's what's going on.
Yes.
We thank you for your call. June from Brooklyn.
The building management needs to get on top of that.
Yeah, you got to get a plumber to figure it out.
June, what's up?
Hi, good afternoon. The faucet on my bathroom sink is dripping when the water is turned off. I assume it's a washer problem. If not, what's the fix, and can I do it myself?
Well, first of all, let me ask you what kind of faucet. Is this the kind of faucet that you turn halfway and it's on and halfway it's off, or is it one that you have to keep turning around a little bit?
You turn it around. It's a normal faucet.
A longer turnaround. All right. If it's what's happening is one of two things. Either the washer on the bottom of that valve or the inside of the bowl of that valve is worn away, or the seat where the washer presses against has a little chip in it. And if it has a little chip in it, the water is leaking through that little chip, and that little seat has to be reground. That has to be done by a mechanic.
Okay.
But as far as changing the washer, you can actually take the whole valve top off, and actually you can look on our website at accuratebuilding.com and repair of faucets on the recipes for home repair page, and it gives you a whole picture of how, and actually even how to grind it also.
Yes,
there are tools to re-grind the valve seat, and so it fits well. So I would look over at our website, and it actually has a bunch of recipes on how to do this. So I would give that a shot.
Okay, June.
Thank you.
We go now to Dee from Cedar Grove in New Jersey. Hi, Dee.
Hi,
Dee. What's up?
I have a question regarding my home has a north. It's north facing, and it has a front porch on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the front porch doesn't really let any light, any sun get to the front of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, it's vinyl sided, and inside the home, I have old plaster walls.
Mm-hmm.
And there's on the paint, we've owned the house for about 6 years. Mm-hmm. There's like a white powdery dust that you can see when you look like at a certain angle, and you could feel it. It almost has like a sticky quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was wondering, is it mold? Is it from condensation? It's not insulated.
Well, if it's not insulated, those sticky kind of things, what we find out that if it's not insulated, you'll get a condition which we call ghosts. And this is caused by condensation forming on those areas that have no insulation. And all of a sudden, the particulate matter from the room sticks to that and gets that powdery substance
which also could have grease in it also, which causes the stickiness.
Absolutely. Anything
that's in the air will stick to the moisture, and then when the moisture evaporates,
It remains behind.
It remains mm-hmm. behind and sticks to the wall.
So and also you can see sometimes you can almost make out where the studs are, where the...
Or the roof rafters,
which is very prominent. So take that has to do with insulation, also no vapor barrier, a couple of other things, no ventilation, and a combination of things that we already know today, which we did not know yesteryear, about how to build a building that doesn't have this malady.
In the old days when the codes were different, the codes that Larry so eloquently defended earlier. Thank you so much for your call. Leanne from Manhattan, you also worried about mold?
Oh, yeah, hi. I actually don't know if you have anything in that black bag for me.
Mm-hmm. Ours is a brown bag. Go ahead.
I'm a renter, and I don't have much money, and it's hard enough for me to pay my rent, let alone do expensive fix. But when I moved in, my bathroom, all they did was slap some flat white on it over the old cracked tiles. And,
right, yeah.
And now it's really like there's mold. I think it's mold. It's hard to get off. And is there an easy way that I can fix it without learning how to tile or spending lots of money? Is there some kind of paint I can use that's better? It's just awful.
Well, have you tried a mild bleach solution to clean it off?
No, I've just been scrubbing.
I would try. Also, Tile-X works pretty well. Anything that has a bleach component to it will probably help you get it off because, you know. But the other thing is to stop it from coming back is the bigger deal. Does your bathroom have a window in it?
Yep.
Do you open the window ever?
Frequently, yeah.
Okay, and so what you need to do, you're doing the right thing. Keep the window open after you shower or bathe, and keep the door open to the rest of the room. But also try cleaning it off with a mild soap, water, and bleach solution, and scrub it at that, and that'll probably take off most of the mold.
Yeah, that's what Tile-X has in. It has an emulsifier, which is soap, and it has some sort of disinfectant together with the solution.
And we thank you for your call. We go now to Barbara from New York City. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. You've answered this before, but now it's for me and other people probably too. I have these kitchen floor tiles that are 44 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Tishman put them in this building originally, and now they're so loose. I think they're 9-inch squares, but they are. I think what they're asbestos composite.
Right.
Okay.
How does she get them off without causing herself some harm?
By hiring.
Thank you, Lenny.
Okay. He knew where you were going. You have to hire a New York City, certified asbestos handler.
Really? You can't do this yourself?
No, because if this is an apartment building, then it could cause a havoc for other apartments because ventilation systems in the
building. Also, it's a violation to take that stuff and put it into the garbage.
Yeah, you just can't put it in a garbage can on the street. That's against the law. This is hazardous material and has to be handled as such. So if you're going to remove them, if they're in bad shape, then you actually have to hire someone to remove it.
Yeah, but the question is, maybe this material is not even asbestos. That's another fact.
Yeah, you're right. There is that possibility.
But if
I was betting a man, I would put more money on that than I would have put on Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Okay? Thank you so much for your call, Barbara. Lynn from Queens, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Okay, earlier in the program, you spoke about using your vegetable scraps and putting them in a blender on the counter, and I did that. I have a house in Pennsylvania also. I did this years ago, and it made what a mess. It bubbled up over the blender, and it was really,
you
really...
You got to put the cover on the blender.
No, wait a minute. It doesn't matter. If you put too much in there, it's going to go out past the cover, too.
But you know what? That happened. That happened with my gravy dressing also, by the way. I want to look for my turkey.
Well, what do you suggest? Oh, yeah. We have very little time, Lynn.
The thing is, it gave me an idea. I invented something. In Pennsylvania, I have an in-sink disposal unit. Are those, I don't know, because I live in an apartment in New York. Are those legal?
No, they're not.
No, they are.
They are?
Garbage disposals
are
now legal.
Or whatever
they're legal.
Else they're called. So I made this incredibly simple invention. I tried to get it patented. I spent about $4,000, and I was rewarded with being told by the patent office
what does
that
it
was
do?
Too obvious, and I did not get a patent for it.
But what is it? Because we're cutting you off.
Could you just tell us very quickly, Lynn, because we have very little time?
Yes. Well, I'd like to be able to share it with people. I mean, you know.
Well, Lynn, I've asked you three times. Could you tell us what it is?
Yes. It's a sort of a modified clean-out thing that installs between the incinerator, the disposal unit, and the pipe that takes the effluent out of the house.
You know what I want to do? Do me a favor. Contact me, Larry@accuratebuilding.com, and we'll talk.
Because we could talk about it next time.
Yeah. Yes.
And you could see, do an analysis.
If it's a viable device.
Right.
Okay. Very quickly, this person says, we live in an apartment with a stove that's been replaced within the last 2 years. Recently, our carbon monoxide detector has started going off whenever we use the stove or oven for more than 20 to 30 minutes. Never goes off when we're not using the stove.
Right.
Any thoughts?
Yes, a great thought. They have to have this thing serviced. It's producing the gas flame. Is for whatever reason, it's producing CO, and they must have that checked immediately.
Probably the air intake vent is closed on that particular set, and you're not getting
proper combustion.
You're not getting complete combustion.
A listener in the Bronx asks, can you tile over existing tile in a bathroom?
Yeah, but it's not recommended. You can, but you do have to do some prep work. Sometimes you can actually put up another layer of Wonderboard on top of it, but you're going to be starting. If you put another layer of Wonderboard, another layer of tile on top of it, you're going to be adding probably about an inch. And so you're going to be making the space smaller. You can also probably staple up chicken wire to give it some kind of bearing to hold on to.
Now, just one more, and you have to make it very quick, Harvey. Yeah. I'm sorry.
What's the question? Quickly.
All right.
Well, Harvey wants to know about double flushing toilets.
Double flushing toilets?
Do you mean the toilets with two different actuators?
No, no. What happens is when you flush the toilet, the water goes out, it comes halfway back in, and goes out again.
Oh, that, in other words, that's a normal thing. What happens is when you flush the toilet, it gets all of the solids out, and then it fills back up again automatically. That which is in the bottom of the toilet bowl has two purposes. One, which is the secondary purchase, which is to get rid of the debris. But the primary purpose is to act as a check to prevent the sewer gases from coming into the building. That's what the water is.
So it goes out a second time.
Yeah, well, the water goes out one, and then it refills the bowl. So that trap, that thing you look at the bottom of the toilet, the water, that is the trap, and that stops the sewer gases.
As far as the second type it goes out, means that the venting inside the system is not working properly.
Now, I know a lot of people are going to be sending stuff to me, even though I tell them not to. They can send it to Larry@ubell.com.
That works also.
And if that is not, and they should send a phone number that you can speak to them directly rather than try to do it all through email.
You got to give us the phone number. Otherwise, we're not going to answer it because it's just too complicated to write back to everybody.
And if you can't do that, then just wait until April 14th when the gurus will be back to
show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it extremely safely.